There is so much that goes into one bottle of wine. So much time, so many resources, so much careful thought.
This big body of water, Lake Michigan, it has so much love to give us.
I was the young generation, now I'm the old one. It's funny how that happens, you know?
I'm adverse to publications of wine to some degree because the people that are writing these articles are living in a vacuum.
Americans have embraced wine more. We've become more of a wine culture.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 314. This week, we feature Chris Hyde of Hyde Estate Winery in Napa Valley. The fruit from Hyde Vineyard has been sought after by many well-known Napa and Sonoma winemakers for quite some time. But only a few years ago, the Hyde family built their own winery and tasting room. We visited with owner-manager Chris Hyde at the estate the Sunday after Premier Napa Valley. The winery is located in the Carneros District and is very well known for top quality fruit. Like many Napa wineries, Hyde Estate is a family operation. So with that in mind, we were joined by another family member, Misha, the German Shepherd.
Well, we have company here in this interview today. Her name is Misha, and she's going to be in the background.
Misha. Yeah, so she'll probably sneak in camera.
There she is. And, of course, more importantly, we're here with Chris Hyde of Hyde Estate Winery. How you doing, Chris?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm good. We're both here the day after Premier Napa Valley, so a little rust on the edges, I guess you'd say, and after spending a day of yelling, so hopefully we're going to be able to keep our voices. So good to see you.
Yeah, good to be here.
Well, thanks for taking the time on a Sunday morning. I'm sure this is probably your quiet time, or you'd like it to be your quiet time, and I'm taking that away.
Not a problem.
Okay, great. Well, you know, the whole thing for me is just to kind of get a little background on you. So, and this is a family business, so was it started by your dad?
Right, yeah. So dad started the business, planting the vineyard back in 1979, family business. And I grew up, born and raised here on the vineyards. Growing grapes, selling them to various wineries, making homemade Merlot in the barn, and eventually it turned into, growing into bigger wine production, Pinot, new vineyard here that my dad and I planted together in 2006, and now we've been making wine for about 10 years.
Wow!
Built the winery. That was a long-term project, and here we are on our second year of winemaking here on the estate winery.
But you guys were very well known for selling fruit in the beginning, very
right.
Popular fruit.
Yeah, you know, it turned into that through my father's expertise and connections that he made in the wine business through his long career. He was able to bring in a lot of winemakers, some who actually got their start making their own wine with Hyde Vineyard fruit. Paul Hobbs, James Hall, Patson Hall, John Consgard, Steve Kistler, some of the original iconic brands, David Ramey, for example, all making Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, Cabernet from Hyde Vineyard fruit. So not just good Chardonnay and Pinot, but other things as well being produced here from the vineyard.
Quite an honor to be able to have those kind of guys coming through here.
Fantastic. Yeah, it was great growing up and getting to know them, and you know, being able to go over and taste wine with them and kind of pick their brain and learn everything you could about fine winemaking and also learning about the vineyard the whole time.
Man, seriously a great way to grow up. I mean, and growing up here in Carneros, which is a beautiful, stunning, and very different part of Napa Valley. I mean, and we are in Napa here.
Yeah, we are. We're, southern edge of Napa Valley. Definitely quite a bit cooler down here. Foggy mornings, windy afternoons. A little bit slower ripening than you get higher up in the hotter parts of the valley. Hey, Misha girl.
I'm now being licked by Misha. My cats will be so mad at you. Go ahead and sit.
But yeah, you know, nice. Honestly, I prefer the weather and the climate down here, especially out in the summertime. But what it does is it creates a climate where you have slower ripening, better retention of acids and phenolics in your wines, which mean that you get these Chardonnays and Pinots that have structure that you can lay down and age. We grow Cabernet here as well. And even with your, especially with your Bordelaise wines, you have a long enough growing season to get everything ripe. So your harvest ends up being, you know, over 2 months long, but we have a wide range of different varieties that we can grow very well here. Syrah, Merlot, Cabernet Franc, Semillon, you know, a lot of the folks over at Premier Napa Valley, I know because I've been selling them grapes for the last 10 or 20 years.
How many acres are you farming?
About 200 acres here in Napa, yeah.
And is it all through this direct area we're at, or are they different parts of the valley? I know I saw something up the
about
road.
20 acres here, and then right up the road, we have another 150 acres, so that's kind of the home ranch where the whole thing started. This vineyard here being the newest addition, and all Pinot Noir and Chardonnay coming from here.
And then did you actually build the winery 10 years ago, or were you crushing elsewhere?
We started crushing at Patson Hall.
How ironic.
Yeah, Pinot Noir, Chardonnay. We actually got the winery built a couple of years ago, but it was a long process. It took about 10 years to really pull everything together and get it done. So we moved in August of 2017, which was the first year we crushed. Kind of barely got in here in the last minute, and just brought our barrels over and had a couple of tanks that we had stored over at Patson Hall. So we were able to crush our Pinot, bring our barrels in and get it done. And, you know, 2017 was a bit of a hectic year, but we made it through. And this past year was our second vintage here in the new winery.
Nice, congratulations.
Thank you.
It's a beautiful winery, beautiful tasting room. You know, as I mentioned a minute ago, first time I tasted grapes from this area was with Patson Hall, which is kind of neat that you started there. They do a great job with your fruit.
They do. They're making Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, and James has been one of the more fortunate winemakers to get all sorts of different good selections that he can play around with over there. And we also were able to kind of study what selections we preferred, you know, in terms of Chardonnay, which kind of influenced the planting decisions that were made over here at this vineyard, bringing over different budwood type of Wente, figuring out what, you know, what sort of style we preferred from the type of grapes we could kind of figure out from the vineyard. We have about 7 or 8 different types of Chardonnay, about the same with Pinot Noir. So not just 10 different varieties, but several different kinds of Merlot, Cabernet, Chardonnay, Pinot to choose from within those. So definitely always experimenting. I have about 3 or 4 different types of Merlot fermenting in the cellar right now, you know, Chardonnay as well. And it gives you tools to play around with, create different blends. And, you know, what we did at Premier was kind of special because we had a selection of Pinot that we really like. And then we had another one that we were able to kind of separate and blend together just for that event, give the Pinot a different character, a little lighter, fruitier side, balanced out with the darker fruit that you get from the other side of the vineyard. So nice. Definitely a lot of fun to be able to experiment with your winemaking, and having your own facility to do it really makes a big difference in the style of the wine and getting it just how you want it to be.
Winemaker, half farmer, half mad scientist.
Yeah, right.
I mean, if I had a nickel for every time everybody talked about experimenting, and I'm not trying to go negative here, but I mean, have you had some failed experiments, some that you were just either disappointed in or just didn't even go anywhere near your way?
No, you know, it's a science, but we do it carefully. So, you know, blending is one of the most important parts of winemaking, putting together blends. Is something you can do to make sure that you're getting it right, that it comes out just the way you want it. So, you know, you're pulling out different wines, putting them together, tasting them blind, and then coming out with what you really see as what you want in the wines, and you're able to do that. You're able to put that together and get it just the way you want it. So, yeah on the contrary, not really a failure. It all starts in the vineyard. So if you get it right there, you know, it's pretty easy to ride it all the way up.
Yeah, the idea of growing up here, from my own point of view, blows me away. Couldn't have been a better childhood, I'm guessing.
It was pretty good. It's definitely an interesting childhood. Different from all the other kids who didn't grow up on a farm. The chores you do, the work that comes with the summertime, you know, it's definitely beautiful and fun and you know, hard work. I didn't really get to play sports like the other kids. but I enjoyed it, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. I would say that, you know, getting away from Napa for a little while was probably one of the most important things that I did. Going away to school. San Luis Obispo is a pretty cool place to get away to. Spent some years down there. And I have to say, all the traveling I do, I'm always happy to be back.
If I had a nickel for every time I heard that, because this is what you're coming back to.
Right.
It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. And, you know, growing up, I've pretty much done every job there is to do out in the vineyard, winemaking, seen it all, done it all, and now managing a winery and, you know, taking it from the soil all the way out to the finished product, and it takes you to a lot of interesting places.
Sure, you're like the maestro with an orchestra, because most conductors know how to play several instruments, and that's kind of where you're at.
Yeah.
And you're the one who pulls it all together.
Sure.
Which is also on your shoulders, too. Okay, there's that other side.
Yeah. But you have to enjoy it, you know, you really have to have a passion for it. And, you know, I can still go out there and jump on a tractor and help out and be there at harvest time, you know, a lot of physical labor, a lot of challenging mental aspects, getting everything right, pulling the trigger on harvest dates, one of the most important things you can do. Kind of staying out there and staying in touch. Things move slowly, but it goes by really quickly when you're, you know, paying attention to all the details.
And there's a lot of details.
Yeah. But we love it. That's why we're here.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. So I made the comparison to music, and I look at the foil on this bottle. We'll try and have a shot of this on top of it. Great. Which has musical notes at the top, and you're curious about that.
Yeah, so that's actually, you know, one of our first labels. Musical notes are a trumpet tune from my mother's hometown in Poland. My mother comes from a town called Lublin, which is a walled city, and they played a trumpet call over the walls to call people in, and. So yeah, the music notes are a tribute to my mother. And if you noticed, the winery is actually designed and built after a Polish manor house. So she helped with the design, and the wine sort of fits into the package and tells the story, and you know, a tribute to some of the people that are working on the back end of the business.
Sure, those are the ones behind the curtain.
Yeah, exactly.
Are they both still involved in the business?
Yeah, absolutely, family business. You know, mother helps out with the books.
Dad's thank God.
Yeah, someone's got to do it. Yeah. You know, thankless job, but someone's got to do it. And Dad's out there in the vineyard, which is where he wants to be. He gets to do the fun stuff. You know, I've taken on a lot of the more dreary aspects of the business, but someone's got to do it. You know, and it's a family operation, so there's not very many of us. I don't have anyone above or below me, really, in terms of management, except for, you know, my vineyard people, and and a couple of us here at the winery that make the day-to-day go on.
Do you have siblings at all?
I do, yeah. So my brother Peter actually helped us start the brand, worked with us for several years. He's moved on to his own projects at this point, but definitely been involved heavily in the vineyard and wine business as well up to this point. So yeah, we've all definitely had a hand in the project. But at this point I'm definitely running the show, and we've come out with a new label. We've come out with a bunch of new wines that we're offering here just from the winery, and having a lot of fun with it.
Nice. It's as it should be.
Yeah.
When did basically your work at the winery, I assume it was right after school that you became full-time or committed?
Yeah, pretty much right after school. We started the brand in 2009. I mean, I was still in college when my dad and I went around gathering budwood. And, you know, I came out in the summertime, helped with the grafting. Designing this block of Pinot. Yeah, it's interesting work out there. As we do all field selections, all field grafting. So we gather our own budwood and graft it onto rootstocks.
Wow.
So, you know, it's an artisanal way to plant your vineyard. Not a lot of people do that these days. You know, cheaper and easier to go to a nursery and buy grafted vines that you can just toss in the ground. But my dad's very much dedicated to doing it the old school way and to, you know, field propagation, figuring out as you go, you know, trial and error. Yeah, but it takes time. You know, it's my dad's had 3 or 4 different replants, and you can only do so much in a lifetime. So working with him has been a blessing, because he's taught me so much about, you know, how to make it work, and being able to pick it up from where he's left off has been pretty cool.
Yeah, it's an honor, I would say, too. So for the length of time you've been in the business as a winemaker, and I'm sure you've done plenty of interviews like this, whether they be print or otherwise, what's the question, and you can think about this, that you don't get asked that you'd like to be asked?
Interesting question. You know, well, you know, do people ask me what it is that really gets me excited about the business and the industry? I like to be outside. I like to be out in the fields and digging around in the dirt, you know, soil science, soil chemistry, plant biology. Those are the things that really got me excited about the wine business, got me wanting to come back. I was always kind of fascinated by plant life and insects and what goes on out in the natural world. And when I kind of started studying and learning that connection between soil chemistry, winemaking chemistry, and, you know, how it all works, how it's all tied together, that's really what got me excited about it. So I can probably sit and just talk all day about, you know, plant material and geek out about the science of viticulture. So I guess if that's what I want to be asked about, that's probably what I enjoy talking about. But I find myself, you know, sometimes in situations where I can just talk all day about it.
Sure.
Whereas otherwise I wouldn't be very talkative at all. So that's something I've learned about myself is that I really enjoy getting into that stuff. And that's what initially brought me back to the family, got me excited about the business.
There's a lot of work that goes into that bottle, and you're the one doing that work, or you and your the team you work with.
That's right. You know, I do remind my guys often. We have our own vineyard crew that works for us full time.
That's nice.
You know, it is, and it really allows us to get out there and get the work done that we need to get done. Ensure the quality of ensure the work gets done in the vineyard to get us the quality results that we're looking for. We deal with a lot of people, a lot of winemakers that are very high maintenance. And I like to think that we get it done the way they want it to be done. And when nobody, you know, has to reach out to me at all, then I know I've done my job. And more often I'd say that's the case. So, you know, we deliver, we get it done. And I try to remind my guys, you know, as often as I can, that what they're doing is really important, that they're creating, you know, they're creating a huge value. And what they're doing here is so important to so many people. You think about, you know, what goes into planting and growing and winemaking, and then you think about the value produced in those bottles, going all the way down to the wine shop, the restaurant, you know, into someone's wine glass. It's amazing how much comes out of it.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you like to drink?
I guess it depends on the day, the time. I've found that Pinot goes down really easy. I like it. Honestly, probably red wine. I grew up on Merlot, but I have to say our Pinots are definitely where I'm at right now.
You just said you grew up on Merlot, and since you grew up here, do you remember the first time you had a drink of wine when you were young? You know, like a parental type here, take a sip thing?
Right. It was probably all the time. You know, one of my first memories about winemaking and being around wine was probably working a bottling line in the cellar below my dad's house. As soon as I was tall enough to reach the corker, I was, you know, popping corks into bottles and running the bottling line, sucking on the siphon hose. Those are probably my earliest memories.
That's hard work too.
Big mouthful of wine as you're trying to get it flowing down the tube into the bottle. So yeah.
That's kind of cool. Never thought about that part.
That's probably some of my earliest memories of winemaking is accidentally inhaling a little bit of red wine.
Accidentally, yes. Oh, I didn't mean to do that, honestly. But boy, it made the day go faster. But you know, also the thing with that is it's a loud job and by many people just really hate the bottling line, so
yeah,
know, but it's obviously a super important part of the process.
It is, and it's hard work, especially when you're doing it all by hand, but you know, at the end of the day, it's a day's work, you get it done, at least when you're doing a barrel at a time, it's, you know, it's a rewarding process, and there you are with cases of finished bottled product, and people really appreciate it, you know.
Oh, yeah, make you really proud, that's for sure. How many cases are you producing yourself?
So we're at about 2,500 cases now. We had been making about 1,000 cases a year. Obviously, we're able to grow the production a little bit. I don't see us making a lot more than that, but, you know, it's definitely a labor of love, and we're not out here to you know, produce a bunch of wine. We're very much farmers at heart. Growing the grapes is always going to be sort of our mainstay. And, you know, we're producing a very small amount of what we grow, to be honest.
Purposely.
Yeah. And it's a study, and it allows you to, you know, kind of learn more about the vineyard as you go. We're still replanting little by little, trying to maintain old vines as much as I can, but there's all sorts of, you know, all sorts of adjustments that I see in the future. You're always thinking 5, 10, 20, 30 years ahead in this business, and we very much look at it from a long-term perspective.
Well, I'm going to repeat myself here. In many interviews, I've used this concept of, as a winemaker, you're living in the past, you're living in the present, and you're living in the future at the same time. There aren't too many jobs that do that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
And it kind of tears you all over the place sometimes, I imagine. Plus, you're a weatherman.
Right, right. And here comes frost season. It's freezing at night. As soon as those vines wake up, I'm out there, you know, 2 or 3 in the morning, firing up wind machines, making sure that the buds don't freeze. It's one of the more stressful times of the year next to harvest, just because you're up out there firing up engines and making sure that everything's running and keeping those babies warm so that they can, you know, grow healthy and produce another year's crop. And at any point in the season, something can go wrong. So you're always on guard. Once those winter holiday months are over, you're right back in the fight. And probably the busiest time of year is in the springtime, once those buds push out and start growing. And then, you know, the race is on, and you get there to around August. If you're lucky, you get to take a deep breath before harvest. But yeah, I mean, it's different every year, and that's what makes it exciting. You know, there's new challenges, things to be paid attention to. So it's exciting. I probably feel like I get more excited about what I do every year.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Well, you see it on your face. Well, you do. You show that excitement. I mean, you're doing something that few people get to do, and it's remarkable.
Yeah.
You know, even though there's, you know, again, compliance or whatever it might have to deal with.
More compliance every year, yeah, I'll tell you that. I'm not excited about that. But you get better at it. You become more efficient. You learn. And you pick up where you left off. And every year there's another vintage of wine to look back on and, you know, to smile on, because it's an achievement, it's a triumph. You got through, you put it in the bottle. We're looking back on 10 years of Pinot production here, and to be able to sit down and taste through all the vintages is pretty cool. You know, look back on the differences between the year and kind of remember what happened and discuss the weather and all the challenges you had and what could I do better? You know, what did I do right?
Yeah.
What was it that I could pick up on? Always thinking about improving. Always thinking about how to get it just the way you want it. And you're never going to get it. There's no ideal vintage, as much as the wine growers will tell you. You know, how was last season? Oh, it was perfect.
Yeah.
And I could say that about last year. It was ideal. It was one of those years where, you know, everything went right. And the weather was moderate, warm. The crop was bountiful. Harvest was one of those harvests where, you know, you can take your time and soak it in and get it right where you want it. There's no trouble with any weather conditions that really throw you off. So
I think you just answered my question, but if you had a favorite vintage, are you saying that 18's your favorite? Or
I think 18's legendary. It's going to go down. It's going to go down in history. You know, it's like children. You like them all,
yeah.
Right? Even tough years like 2011, you can look back and smile on the achievement you had with your Pinot, what you did with all your wines. The vintage is going to determine how they age, also your winemaking. But some of the more challenging years, you know, you come back 10 years later and the wine has evolved into something beautiful. Whereas the first couple of years, you know, maybe it wasn't where you wanted it to be. But that's the thing about the wines. Some of the wines that are, you know, beautiful up front might not be that way later on down the road.
The Ugly Duckling.
So, yeah, you never know. You never know. But the beauty is you get to sit and watch them evolve. And the winemaking style that, you know, that we go after is to represent the vineyard and a little bit the vintage as well. So obviously you want the wines to be able to age well, and they can do that because of, you know, the site, the soil, the natural acidity in the wines gives them their longevity and, you know, contributes to how they age over time.
Sure. I'm kind of curious, and I've asked a lot of winemakers this, and this answer's all over the board, and that is what you hold back to be able to see, not only for library tastings, but for how did it age?
Right.
Do you hold a lot? Is it a case, 2 cases, 20 cases, especially as a small producer?
Sure. In the beginning, we weren't producing very much wine. We didn't hold back a whole lot. You know, we were storing it all in our cellar.
You have a very regretful face right now.
I wish I had more of the 2009s and 10s. I'd say just a couple of cases of each. But, you know, I've started holding back 10 or 20 cases more recently because I want to have those wines. I want to be able to share them and enjoy them. So yeah, we do hold back, you know, at least 10 cases of each vintage, which I think is great. But definitely in the beginning, didn't hold back probably as much as we should have. But we do have, you know, a few cases of each vintage going all the way back to the beginning. So nice to be able to kind of reflect on that and you know, do a tasting once in a while and share them if you can.
So Chris, obviously, as I said before, we're here at the winery, and I'm assuming, are you by appointment or can people just wander on in?
It's by appointment, and we didn't choose to have the winery that way. The county enforces, you know, regulations that they give you by appointment tastings only, but there's ways around it. You know, people show up at my door, I will make them an appointment and host them if I can. I'm always happy to open the doors and let people come in and sit down and you know, I host tastings myself.
Nice. Wow.
Yeah, very much a family business, but the doors are always open. So
nice, yeah. Nice. Yeah. So if people want to learn a little bit more about you and Hyde Estate, how would they do that online?
You can go to www.hydewines.com, check out the vineyard at hydevineyards.com, and come on down and visit us at the Hyde Estate Winery here in Carneros.
Which is an incredibly beautiful area. Chris, thanks very much for taking your Sunday morning to be with me. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Listen to Chris and our Vino Lingo segment, defining the term budding, and learn more by visiting hydewines.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Additional original music by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak and Catherine Shearer. Copyright 2019.